The U.S. Department of Labor released the latest data on labor union membership last week. It saw a decline in the unionization rate nationwide and here in Wisconsin. The percentage of workers who reported being members of a labor union nationwide was down to 10.1%, the lowest rate since they've tracked that data. The rate went down despite high-profile cases of workers organizing at high-profile companies like Amazon and Starbucks around the country. The same data show that the total number of workers who belong to a union went up in 2022, but not at the same rate as non-union jobs, so that percentage of workers went down overall. Our next guest is here to help us make sense of the trends and look ahead to where organized labor could go from here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does your workplace have a labor union? Are you a member? What are you getting from the union, do you think? What do you hope it could do better? If you don't work in a unionized place, do you wish you could? Call in with your experiences, your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. John Haywood is Distinguished Professor of Economics and Director of the Graduate Program in Human Resources and Labor Relations at UW-Milwaukee. John, thanks for joining us today.
Rob, it's my great pleasure.
We've seen this longer-term decline in union membership in the U.S. and here in Wisconsin. Looking at these latest numbers, first of all, from the federal government, what, if anything, does it tell us about unions and labor in the U.S.?
Well, I think it tells us that even though labor has been having a moment over the last year or two, that moment has not been yet enough to reverse what has been a long-term secular trend. You mentioned that this was as low as the comparable data had ever shown it, but economists have gone back and tried to put together a longer time series, and it's probably the lowest since the National Labor Relations Act. Unionization probably hit a high point in the 1950s and has basically declined ever since.
Let's talk about that moment a little bit. The idea that, okay, we've got a tight labor market. We're seeing some successful organizing campaigns winning union votes anyway at the Starbucks and Amazons of the world. Why has that just been because it's companies we've heard of? Why hasn't that translated into higher union membership?
Well, that's a good question. I think there are a number of different parts to it. I think you're right that the tight labor market is part of the attempt to grow unions. You're more likely to be successful creating a union, or for that matter, going on strike if it's hard to replace you, and the low unemployment, and even more profoundly, the low labor force participation. That's the share of potential workers who are actually working. Both of those are indicative of a very tight labor market. So the short answer, I suppose, to the question is it's one thing to organize and another thing to get to a first contract and actually be a unionized member under a union contract. So you mentioned Starbucks. I think we're at 250 successful organizing campaigns across the country, but there hasn't been one contract signed yet, Rob. So this process takes a long time. The firms have every incentive to draw it out, to hope things change, to hope the people who are interested in a union leave. So it's always a fraught and, frankly, long-term process to actually go from a non-union environment to a unionized one.
Labor laws and labor enforcement has changed over the years. Is part of the story here a tough climate for union organizing efforts under federal and state laws?
Well, yes. I think you should be careful to distinguish between those two sets of laws, federal and state. To mention state first, I mean, Wisconsin is well below the national average in unionization now. And that's because, and we didn't used to be, it wasn't very long ago that we were well above. But the reason is because of changes in state law, specifically Act 10, that made it much harder for public employees to unionize, and the right to work laws that made it much harder for private sector workers to organize. So the combination of those two changes in state law have made Wisconsin, frankly, have a lower unemployment rate than our neighbors. Maybe we're kind of tied with Iowa, but well below all of our other neighbors.
Talking to John Haywood. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say that on the federal level, the interpretation of the laws has changed more than the laws themselves. So the ability, for example, to have permanent strike breakers, as was threatened in the recent CNH strike here in Wisconsin, is a fine example. When the law's interpretation changes and allows employers to do that, then strikes become less successful and the advantages to organizing become less as well.
I wanted to ask, we're just hearing in the news that strike ended just over the weekend. This affected a lot of workers in Racine, some in Iowa as well. The United Auto Workers members had spent 7 months on strike. Could you describe why these strikes were happening despite the membership declines we're talking about here?
Sure. I think it's the same phenomena with respect to the organizing. I mean, the times over the last couple of years have been advantageous to try to organize and, frankly, to try to strike. You want to strike when have a small chance of being replaced, when the firm really, really needs you. That's when you're going to have the most success. Now, we emphasize that the labor market is tight, and so that increases the chance of strikes. In fact, between 2021 and 2022, there was a 50% increase in the number of strikes. So 2022 was a big strike year, at least relative to recent times. And I think, there, in addition to the labor market, in many of the cases, not particularly in the Racine and Burlington, Iowa case, but in many of the cases, the strikes have resulted also because of a realization that came from COVID to the workers that they were much more essential, and frankly, that their jobs were much harder than they thought. So, for example, the nurse strikes that have been going on this last year, most recently, very large strikes in both Minnesota and more recently New York City, nurses were finding that their jobs were more dangerous than they thought. And they struck in both of those cases, in part, over staffing ratios. So combination of COVID and the labor market, I think, are responsible for why we've seen more strikes.
Talking to John Haywood, professor of economics at UW-Milwaukee, looking at the state of organized labor in the United States. Union membership rates down a bit in the latest data, though the overall numbers of people in unions went up just a bit. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Pat is with us in northern Wisconsin. Pat, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon, John. I'd like to talk a little bit about membership decline, and I have a couple views on that. We've had a Republican governor in the state that did everything that he could to minimize labor, organized labor, through Act 10, through Right to Work. We've just diminished the importance of the union. We have members that can actually be in a union without paying any dues, membership to that union. Our Right to Work status has put us down there with states in the South. We get many members or many employees coming in from the South, from Right to Work states that can't make a living down there, that come to states that have organized labor to work on union job sites to get the benefits and the pay that is associated with that. I agree that we are losing the labor force, but the cards are stacked pretty well against us when we had a governor that did everything he could to break the unions in the state of Wisconsin.
And Pat, to clarify, are you or were you a union member?
I'm a 39-year union member.
All right. Thanks, Pat, a lot for sharing your perspective. John, you had talked a little bit about the impact of Act 10 and Right to Work. And looking at charts pre and post, it is really quite striking, as you mentioned, Wisconsin well above the national average before 2010 when it comes to union membership rates, now well below. And there's that crossing point is right there in like 2011, 2012.
That's absolutely right. And, I don't really disagree with much that Pat said. He's pointed to the reasons. At some fundamental level, unions are the creation of this of a government deciding that workers need a collective voice. So it's when they change that view, then unions are going to suffer. It took the National Labor Relations Act to create widespread unionism on the national level. States themselves make these laws. Pat emphasized the right to work law, and one of the consequences of the right to work law is that you can enjoy the benefits of a union contract without having to pay for the costs of your union negotiating that contract. So that means that the individuals will choose rationally, if they're thinking about dollars and cents only, they'll choose to work at a unionized employer but not join the union. And then pretty soon the union fails. So this is the result of the changes in law that you and I, Rob, have been talking about. Absolutely.
Pat, thanks for that call. We're talking to UW-Milwaukee economics professor John Haywood, looking at the latest trends in labor union participation, the latest data out from 2022. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about a labor union membership, organizing trends around the country, strikes around the country? Were you surprised by some of the organized labor activity we saw across the country last year? Are you involved in something in your own workplace? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with John Haywood, Distinguished Professor of Economics at UW-Milwaukee, with us today to look at changes in labor union participation in Wisconsin and around the country. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your own experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Hey, how's it going? I guess my comment is sometimes it's not always about the money. Sometimes it's about working conditions and time off and sick leave and stuff. A good example would be that potential railroad strike where it sounded like they offered a lot of money, but that wasn't really the issue. And if you can negotiate over stuff like that, even if it doesn't involve wages and benefits, sometimes, that helps out not only attracting workers, but also makes a better work life for the employees.
Jimmy, thanks for that call. I think when we talk about labor unions, sometimes, John, we ask, does this raise wages and benefits? But as Jimmy was saying, working conditions are part of the story, too. Can you talk about that?
I'd be delighted to. I think Jimmy's exactly right. I mean, he mentioned the railroad strike. The issue there was certainly days off. I mentioned earlier the nurses' strike, where the issue was the staffing ratios. They thought they were being in workplaces that were potentially dangerous for their own patients because there were too few nurses for the patients. So these are definitely working condition issues. And frankly, unions rose and have been successful in part because of their ability to give voice to these kinds of concerns and to have them fixed. I also like Jimmy's point that sometimes if you can fix these working conditions, the consequence is good for everyone. It's not just good for the workers, it's not just good for the patients or the clients or the customers, but it could even potentially be good for the firm. They can learn more about what makes a happy workforce. They can learn more from people on a shop floor about how to improve production. Having a union provides a formalized way of communication that, while managers have traditionally felt usurps their control, can actually lead to more cooperative and superior outcomes. So hats off to Jimmy for making that point.
Jimmy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Drew is with us next in Fitchburg. Drew, hi.
Hi. I was always curious why unions aren't protected under the constitutional right to peaceably assemble.
Oh, interesting, Drew. Thanks. Should we allow unions on a more fundamental level, Drew is saying.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I'm no constitutional lawyer. I'm an economist. But I think, you know, there's a difference probably between assembly and group activity. So, you know, assembly, getting together, talking, and free expression, saying the employer is lousy, that may very well be protected constitutionally. But the ability to withhold as a group your labor, maybe not.
Drew, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to John Haywood, Distinguished Professor of Economics at UW-Milwaukee, looking at labor unions around the country and here in Wisconsin. What's driving some of the latest trends? Still a general downward trend in the rate of unionization, even though the numbers went up a little in the most recent data. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. We heard from Mary in Eau Claire, who couldn't stay on the air, but was wondering about the success of recent efforts to unionize Amazon. And we've seen some work sites, John, a vote for unionization. I think it might be in the same category as Starbucks, where that doesn't necessarily mean they have a negotiated contract yet.
That's exactly right. So far at Amazon, what we've seen is a warehouse in the greater New York area successfully go through a campaign. But there's no contract yet. So we'll see. They're not yet sort of union members under a union contract.
Now, can you talk about that process? You mentioned it's lengthy. What has to happen between that union vote and a union contract being negotiated? Can that drag on forever, hypothetically?
I suppose. I mean, each side is supposed to bargain in good faith. That is in the eye of the beholder often and can end up in court. Failure to bargain is in good faith is an unfair labor practice. The Starbucks example, we're coming up almost on a year since the first one, was that in Buffalo, perhaps, successfully held an election. So the incentive, first of all, let me say it's complicated to write any contract. You've got two parties sitting down for the first time to try to itemize exactly what the jobs are, exactly who gets paid what for when, exactly what the terms of employment are. And this is new for both sides if they've never been unionized before. So that's going to necessarily take some time. But in addition, one of the things we've learned is that there's a big incentive for employers to drag the process out. By doing that, the economic climate might change. Workers might feel suddenly they need their job and that low unemployment rate is now a high unemployment rate and they're worried. The people who were fundamental in organizing the union may have left and gone elsewhere. Indeed, there's an entire industry out there of the labor consultants that advise major firms about exactly what delaying tactics to use.
When people think of unions, John, they might think of a big factory, or maybe if they're thinking public sector, the teachers' union. How much attention has there been to the service sector, one of the big employers in this country?
Well, that's absolutely right. And if you had to give one out of three reasons for why there's a big decline, the incredible shift from a manufacturing economy to a service economy would probably be in that top three. And the service industry is notoriously hard to organize because you've got workers that are not necessarily full-time. You've got workers who aren't necessarily there a long tenure. You've got only small plants, typically. You know, I mean, a Starbucks has nothing like the employees at a auto assembly plant. And so you work hard to organize, and to some extent, there are great economies of scale. And so small service shops have been sort of last and latest in getting organized. There's no question. But it's starting to happen, as we've been describing. And here in Milwaukee, our Colectivo coffee shop, by one vote, successfully voted for unionization. And, you know, there are examples. So it's a growth area. I mean, that's one way to look at it.
In our last minute or so, John, 2023, what do you have your eye on most closely when it comes to unions in America?
Good question. Well, specifically, I'm really interested in the contracts with UPS, always a big trendsetter, important contract. I'm interested to see whether there are more strikes that go on, keep that trend going. And I'm really interested to see whether we finally get some contracts out of all these service sector votes.
We'll leave it there, John. Thanks again for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Rob. You take care.
You too. That's John Haywood, Distinguished Professor of Economics and Director of the Graduate Program in Human Resources and Labor Relations at UW-Milwaukee. He's with us today looking at how labor union membership changed in 2022, year to year, and over time. There is still time for you to share your story if you've been in a unionized workplace or wish you had or were in one and wish you weren't. Love to hear from you about your experience there. And is there a subject related to the workplace, organized labor or not, that you would like to hear us talk about here on the Ideas Network? Let us know. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Or send us a message over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear your stories and your suggestions for future workplace conversations along the way.